Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety,
oh God, I lost my paddle,
gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Hi, and welcome to the Tuesday live show that we're doing on Tuesday. I'm here with my friend Zach Hoffman. Welcome to the show, Zach.
Hey, Zach. How's it going?
This is Zach Squared today. And I want to be clear with everybody. I'm kind of brain dead right now. Other Zachs can have to carry the show for us. So I'm going to make a lot of mistakes, say a lot of wrong things. And so thank you for being here to help carry the show. Otherwise, this would be a total dud. More of a dud than they normally are.
Hey, that's all right. That's what the blooper rolls are for.
Oh, yeah. This whole thing's going to be a blooper roll for me. For those of you that don't know, we do this show almost every Tuesday-ish, sometimes Wednesday, sometimes Friday, usually at 2 o'clock. And the idea is we just answer questions and have guests come on once in a while. The show is sponsored by our friends at GoRafting.com. Do you know about this, Zach? GoRafting.com?
I knew about it a little bit more when I was kind of in the outfitting bit. But, I wouldn't say that I go to it very regularly. I'm aware of it.
I'm going to make you aware of it.
Tell me all about it.
I'm going to sell you on this. Okay. It's a website, right? They have like descriptions of rivers. Look, I can go to like Nugget Powerhouse, right? Like, are you right now at Sawyer Station or Sawyer Headquarters?
I'm at the headquarters. I'm in Talon.
Okay. So if you were at Sawyer Station, this is your backyard run. This is a map. You could use this to negotiate the river. Look at this. It tells you all kinds about it, all kinds of things. The mileage, the names, all the stuff. Isn't that awesome?
Gotcha.
Now, you probably know all this, but let's say you're visiting from out of town and you want to know where things are. This is it for you. But it's better than that.
Right.
Because it's an app that has the map, and it tells you where you are on the river. So when you're at mile 1.3, it tells you the Squeeze Rapid is 0.03 miles ahead.
Gotcha.
That's pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, that is awesome. Does it give you shuttle information?
It's a good question. I don't think so. If people want a shuttle, where do they go?
I would say the best place to go locally is Rapid Shuttles.
Hold on, Zach. You're now making my sponsor look bad because they don't have shuttle information.
That's all right. Let's go to the Lower Rogue. There's multiple shuttles down there.
Okay. But so let's say you want to do Lower Rogue. Okay, boom. Go to the west, find the Rogue River. Where's Oregon? Wild and Scenic Rogue. You call it the Lower Rogue. It's actually I would call it the Wild Rogue myself.
There you go.
Because it's wild and scenic, more like way more miles than just apart from Reeve Creek to Foster Bar. But same thing. There's all kinds of it has shuttles right there. Boom. Click here for shuttle information.
There you go.
Ooh, except Galise isn't doing shuttles anymore. Oh, it opened up a link. They need to do an update. Yep. And there's more shuttle companies. Interesting.
Right. And that's also the way with every app, right? I mean, it's like, every app you have, this shouldn't be any different. Every app you have constantly is updating. That's the beauty of an app. Yep. They just do an update and they can upload all the new shuttle information, tomorrow at midnight, and boom, it's all there.
Yep. And so what you do, just so you know, you get the Far Out app. It's free. And then you buy these maps and it tells you where you are, talks about the river, has photos. You can download all kinds of cool stuff.
Right.
You don't need this on the Lower Rogue, but if you were new to the river, it'd be really nice to know where every single thing is.
And you can use that. Can you actually, so say I was going to go to a river in California that I've never run before.
Uh-huh.
You could basically pin it down to a specific river and glean as much intel on that river before you got there.
Yeah. I mean, the idea is there's intel here, right? Forks of the Kern, right? Permits, safety. And then you can get all the data here you want. It's free, all the information. The cool thing about the app, though, when you download your phone, is it like tells you where you are on the map.
And right.
So you can follow. You're like, I don't know. Are we above this rapid or that rapid? You can pinpoint where you're at and be like, oh, it's 0.7 miles to the next rapid. And then you'll know like how, as you get closer, so you're not freaking out too much. And it tells you where the camps are and things like that. Kind of cool.
But it does it pinpoints you if you're in an area that has cell service.
No, this is, you don't need cell service. That's
so
the beauty.
Does it run off of satellite? Is it
GPS?
GPS. Okay, so as long as you have your locator turned on when you disappear from cell service.
Yeah, you have to. The thing is, you have to download the maps to your phone first. So it has all the data, all the photos, all the stuff. And it's GPS. You don't need cell service for your GPS. I used it on the Grand Canyon. It was pretty cool.
Gotcha.
Let's say it works. The cool thing, too, is like you said, rivers change. And last year, Velvet Falls changed, for example. Let's find Velvet Falls.
Exactly.
And so they can update Velvet Falls pretty quickly. Oh, sorry. I'm going way past it. It's like mile 6-ish. See, Velvet Falls. Learn more about Velvet Falls updated. It even mentions that there's a debris flow. And I know the crew who makes the app was on the Middle Fork last week. Hopefully they come back, update it with more photos and more information. And continue.
Right. Because I think I saw there were some postings about Velvet Falls.
Yeah.
Like over the last few days, people are starting to come off the river, and it's kind of at that level, big debris pile, big manky hole.
Yeah, a couple manky holes, from what I understand. But hopefully they update the app. So instead of buying a map that is like, that's the map of stationary and time, you're buying an app and you get the updates as rivers change and shuttle companies change, things like that. So they're the sponsor of our show.
Excellent.
Yeah, super nice of them. Okay, back to our agenda. You're going to talk about Guides Across America, which you've explained to me a couple times. I still don't get it. I get it. I think I get it. But do you want to explain it to me again like I'm a bigger dummy than I am?
Yeah. So Guides Across America is something that stems off of the Guide Relief Program. And so you kind of go back in time into the COVID era when, if everybody kind of imagines back to middle of 2020, say April 2020, everything's getting shut down. You got guides that are basically ready to start their season, and all of a sudden their seasons can't happen. You know, whole tourist towns are just like, no, we're not having anybody come to restaurants, we're having people stay in hotels, yada, yada, yada. So all that's happening. And then of course the government is rolling out all kinds of benefits to everybody to help them adjust to this, right? Well, the first thing that happened with the Guide Relief Program is all these guides, who a lot of them, like in Montana, are just independent contractors. They couldn't apply for any kind of benefits. So Montana was the point that kind of the apex of all this. And they started figuring out how they could actually help guides get registered as gig workers, in turn get benefits just like an Uber driver was getting benefits. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of stemmed one thing to another. And that kind of went all through 2020. They helped a lot of guides that were, one, couldn't get any benefits, two, that were, you know, able to work, but their work was really truncated. So they couldn't quite, you know, they couldn't quite make a living at it. And so they had to have other supplements. And so that's kind of where the whole thing started, kind of as helping guides that had some sort of financial crisis. And now we move forward from that after into 2021, into 2022, things are moving along. And this program is kind of growing, and they're finding out that the outfitting and the guide programs, there is a lot of need there. You know, I mean, I would imagine like yourself and a lot of the whitewater companies have their employees, or their guides are actually employees. But mm-hmm. a lot of companies still all around the country use guide staff as subcontractors. And subcontractors don't necessarily have the same benefits. And so it kind of came about where, even if that guide was to get hurt either on the river or not on the river, all of a sudden they cannot work, they don't have any income, and they have a whole bunch of medical bills. So it was kind of one of these things that kind of stemmed from that. Then also kind of the unspoken piece of guiding, which is all the glamour and glory of guiding, but also then there's trauma that happens. There's definitely a mental health element to that. And it depends on just what comes about from any specific season. It could be a significant event on the river. It could be a significant event on the shuttle, getting to and from, you know, but those kind of things kind of build up. And so they added in a mental health element to where a guide can just register for the guide relief program and apply for a couple free sessions of mental health just to go talk things out with somebody, to talk to a professional about what's going on. So the Guides Across America bit was kind of like, let's take this one step further. Instead of just kind of being small into the states of Montana, maybe Colorado, let's think nationwide for all guides and move it from just fishing guides to rafting guides to tour providers on water. And that's where Guides Across America came from, is basically that's build a rainy day fund that every guide could tap into, and big and small. So like an independent guide may have certain needs, but you as an outfitter could tap into this. Say there was a fire at your Echo House, that a forest fire that was out of your control and swept through
which
your warehouse.
Is pretty likely it happened.
That's you honestly. Know, I mean, forest fires in, out here, that's a thing.
In Merlin, you know? Oregon is the like voted one of the most likely places to burn down in America right now.
Yeah, you know, and so the whole Guides Across America piece kind of came from, if you remember back a couple of years ago, is pretty much the Hurricane Ian event, where that wiped out a good majority of southwestern Florida. And here you had these guide companies that were pretty much, you know, working with the relief programs. They were, you know, motoring around fuel and food and resources to different little communities. And there was a company there, or an organization called Captains for Clean Water, that we worked with to generate some funds, generate some awareness. And it was actually an outfit in Texas that's just kind of like, you know, hey, Zach, you know, I understand you're doing this program, raise some money for Captains for Clean Water, but you know, we don't float in drift boats, we don't use oars, but we actually have guides that we go fish with in Montana and guides that we go raft with in Idaho, and they use oars. So maybe we could sponsor, you know, a fund for the guide. And so we kind of took that and kind of worked with it a little bit. And basically the Guides Across America piece came about. And this is actually, it's only 6 months old. So it launched pretty much as an extension from the Guide Relief Fund program to Guides Across America. And right now, one of the reasons that I reached out to you is that your ears were probably burning, because I did actually challenge you directly when I was on last week. And basically we're trying to raise funds and raise awareness for Guides Across America. And part of that is we've got this incredibly huge prize package that they're giving away, and it's going to one person only. And we're pretty much asking for a minimum of a $25 donation to get your name in the hat for this big drawing. And so what I was basically multiple times through the last video that we were on last week was talking about how this is literally a way for guides to help themselves. Like a guide could actually put a $25 donation in. They could possibly win all this cool stuff, basically would do all their Christmas shopping for the entire year, even if they didn't want to use it, you know. But it is also one of those things is where, like, you as an outfitter, if you would email this program out to some of your folks that come with you regularly, you know, they would have interest in it. You know, a lot of the people that come and boat with all the outfitters, fishing and rafting alike, you know, the customer, your customer, has that real tie to your guide staff, right? Your guide staff is what makes you look great. And your customer has that connection to your guide staff. And if your guide staff is really doing their job, then, you know, that bond is there. And those people are, you know, they're getting, you know, they're getting Christmas cards from your guests and such, you know, same thing, where those are the folks that actually have that connection with the guiding entity. And so it, Guides Across America is kind of broadening it out to where it's just, we're starting with water-based guiding in the U.S. That's where Guides Across America is trying to put their feet into it. And
I have a lot of questions.
Go ahead.
I interrupt you and just go with questions.
Fire your questions.
First of all, that's on the screen, that those three photos.
Right.
Two of those are my photos. How did they get my photos?
Well, that one you shared with me, and the put in one, probably you just had it on something. And
all right. I just thought, I'm like, those look really familiar. Okay. So you mentioned earlier that this is for freelance guides. Like, if somebody's paid, is this only for people that are paid as contractors, or is this paid for people who are W-2?
It's for anybody who makes a living one way or another on water-based guiding.
Okay.
So any guide, even if they're an employee guide of yours,
yeah,
could have some sort of catastrophic event happen in their workspace that even after all of everything fleshed out with your coverage and how you dealt with mm-hmm. it as a company, there could still be a lot of scarring and things they need to deal with. There could be just a mental issue they need to deal with. There could be a financial issue that they have to deal with. You know, it could be that whatever happened, they got taken care of, but then they're out of work for a month of their primary income generating season.
Okay. You know? So is this like, they can just apply and they get money. They're like, hey, you know what? I missed a month. Like, let's say they were on a trip and broke their ankle and had to take a month off from work. They right. could then go apply to this for money to help compensate.
Yeah,
them
yeah.
For
it's basically if you know, it would be best if they were proactive that they would actually go in and actually sign up to be part of the guide relief program, and then they would get updates of what's going on. They would get an idea of things that are happening, and then yes, there are places where they can actually click to apply. They're going to apply for a financial hardship. I mean, there's okay. cases where folks just, you know, smaller operations, obviously, that are probably have the most to gain from it. But just, you know, financial hardships of operating in the change of, you know, things that were out of their control, where a certain river shut down and now all of a sudden they had to drive an hour or 2 hours in each day. And all of a sudden at the end of every week, they had a huge fuel cost. You know, I mean, there's to a small point like that versus an outfit that would say lost one, you know, one part of their season that they could offer. So, you know, maybe a mudslide closes off a section of river.
Mudslides like to do that. So is this for guides and outfitters as well? Like, let's say I lose a month. Let's say I lose a month of the Middle Fork of the Salmon. Can I apply as an outfitter?
You can. I mean, it's basically you would want to probably apply for taking care of more of your guide staff. You know, I mean, it's not like an insurance for to take care of your entire loss of the season. But basically, yes, you would want to be like, you know, you want to try and find some relief for this alteration.
Okay, so hold on. I don't understand. Is it from like, so is it for, because it's confusing. Is this for the individual guides to make sure they get paid if I cancel a month of the season? Or is this for the outfitter to help cover the costs of running the business for that month of the season? Or is it for both? Because those are two totally different things.
Right. So it's fairly open to where basically you would both be able to apply.
Okay.
Whether the individual guide would actually have a different case, obviously, than the independent outfitter would. Mm-hmm. You know, more than likely, if there was a a catastrophic event on a river, you're not the only outfitter.
Yeah.
So then it would probably be as like, what type of funds can we actually get to this group of outfitters that had this catastrophic thing that happened? So you're talking about a slide that blocked a road for a bunch of Middle Fork guides, you know, same thing where, how about a fire that closes off the road for a bunch of road guides, to where that would be more of, you know, let's say all these outfitters here are going to apply for, we need some relief to our operation.
Yeah.
And that's the bit. And so like right now, the guide relief program, which is kind of the company that's kind of shouldering this as Guides Across America, they've raised about $100,000. Wow. They've handed out about, I think it's about $37,000. And most of those grants that have been awarded have mostly been to smaller entities. And so that's why, like a lot of this, we talk about it where it's like, yeah, it's not something that a little company in Talon, Oregon is going to be able to be the one that shoulders this whole thing. I mean, yeah, it's a huge lift. But if multiple people are actually involved in it, it's kind of like, why should we always be reactive? Why don't we try and be proactive? Because these things are happening on a regular basis of about every other year at least. So at one point or another, there's you know, an event that's going to seriously affect a tourism entity that is water-based guiding in general in one way or another. And I mean, it could be just, you know, eliminating total access to some area, or, you know, I mean, the hurricane in Florida was a very extreme thing. The fire out here in Southern Oregon, you know, that definitely, you know, hit all of the tourism. It didn't necessarily hit a specific river company, but definitely tourism was hampered immensely during that time. But also, I mean, it was, you know, the Alameda fire in Southern Oregon during COVID, you know, I mean, it was pretty much the perfect storm. But, but yeah, you know, and flooding in Montana, washed out roads in Idaho, those are the kind of things that, yes, a group of outfitters would apply.
And guides. Like outfitters. And guides. Outfitters apply. Guides and guides. Outfitters. Okay. But so when you say independent guides, do you mean independent contractors? Or just can they be employees of the outfitter as well?
They could be employees of the outfitter as well. Because basically every application would be uniquely different as far as the things that they would say. If it was an employee guide, they would say, you know, this is the event that happened. This is what has affected me. This is what I'm getting from my employer. And here are all the extra circumstances that I'm not able to handle. And I still want to continue to be a water-based guide.
I think I understand. Where does the money come from?
The money comes from things that we're doing right here.
Donations.
Raising money. I mean, they obviously... The guide relief program has some big, you know, bigger donors, but the main thing is that Guides Across America is literally like the first thing that we're doing is kicking off this fundraiser, trying to get people to donate. And this is literally, we have a $17,000 prize package that we're asking people to throw down $25 for to help the guiding industry and give yourself a chance to win. If you don't want to use all the stuff yourself, like I said, that's Christmas presents for your whole extended family.
Okay. And I just found it and I lost it. Let me open this up again. So if people did want to donate to this, they could go to Guides Across America here. Where's this list of prizes again? Learn more.
Hit right there.
Okay. So they can win all of these things.
All of those things. One person is going to win all of those things.
That's a lot of stuff.
That is a lot of stuff. So basically, that $17,000 package should move at least half of your audience to just get up and make that donation.
Well, it depends how many people have entered. What are the odds?
The odds, I would say there will probably be 1 in 1,000 odds at the most.
So you think you're going to raise $25,000?
We're on our way.
On track to do that. Okay, got it.
We're on our way.
Okay, so pretty good odds to win all this stuff and support struggling guides who have been through some sort of hardship and need some sort of financial help to get through the hardship, because they've chosen a difficult career where hardships are a part of it. And this helps me handle some of the hardships they go through. Does that sound right? Exactly.
I mean, it's basically, I mean, the guide choice is something that somebody makes on their own. Like, nobody forces them to guide, right? But if they want to stay doing that, this is a resource to help guides continue being guides.
Okay.
And you know, from an outfitter standpoint, you know, this is a resource that maybe helps you not lose one of those guides that you really don't want to lose. But we all know that it does happen. You know, and guides leave, and it's usually because some big event happens or a life change happens in their life. And then, you know, because we're trying to represent all of water-based guiding, that's why there's like one of the main pictures is the folks on a charter fishing boat. It's like, yeah, that doesn't really identify with what you and I do, but yeah. I mean, I don't sell oars to the guy on the charter fishing boat either, but that guy still makes his living with his charter fishing boat and takes people out on fishing adventures. You know, are those same people going to come and go on a Middle Fork rafting trip? Maybe not, but maybe they are. You know, I mean, it's all related. It's all water-based guiding. And that's the bit. And even actually a side note on that, with the boat that's in this package, it's actually a Super Puma. It's made by Air. For Outcast, everybody knows Air and Outcast are one. And so, you know, I mean, even if you're a whitewater guy, there's a Super Puma right there in that package.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily need to use it to fish. You, like I said, you give all those prizes away to your friends and family. You're like a rock star at Christmas time. And then you got a new boat for yourself as well.
Okay.
And then you give your parents the guided trip so they can go and, you know, do a trip with Sweetwater Travel.
Oh, I'd like that trip to the Bighorn Lodge. Sounds pretty cool. Royal Bighorn Lodge.
Exactly. You know, the Bighorn Lodge, you know, might need to be something that is on the rafting app.
Oh,
mostly fishing float, but
it probably won't make it then. I don't know. We'll see.
Fishing floats will make it on the gorafting.com.
Okay. So just to wrap this up, I just want to summarize what's going on. Guides Across America is a great organization to support professional water-based guides in times of need. If people want to join this, they can pay $25 to enter and potentially win $17,408 in prizes. And they can enter. I'll put the link in the show somewhere below. But
yeah, put the link in the show. Yeah. It's the guidereliefprogram.com/win.
Yep. That's it. It's guidereliefprogram.org/win.
Yes. There you go.
Don't forget the .org.
Yeah. Well, click the link is the easiest way to go.
The real
time sensitive piece of this is that this drawing comes to a head at the end of this month.
3 days.
3 days. So you have till midnight. You have till 11:59 Friday night.
Okay.
And that's it.
I think people should just do it right now.
I think it's best that you should probably challenge some of your guiding friends to make a donation. You tell them what you're going to donate, and then they can match it.
Okay. I will donate $25, and I will challenge my guiding friends to donate $25.
Anybody Everyone on it? The Rogue and the Middle Fork and the Salmon.
Well, they're all probably on the Rogue and the Middle Fork and the Salmon right now.
There you go.
Okay.
You can challenge one of your closest outfitting companies to email the link to their database.
That's a lot of emails. I'm gonna challenge Covey, who's in that back photo, to donate to the Guides Across America program.
He's not a guide.
Kind of is.
Yeah, I guess. Is he really? I don't know.
I mean, that's how I met him. We needed a guide for a trip on the Rogue, and he worked a trip on the Rogue for us a long time ago.
Oh, there you go. Yep. Well, I mean, I know he knows how to move a boat.
Yeah.
Not just a paddleboard.
Yep.
But, you know, I mean, maybe you could just, you know, maybe there's another another guide out there that, you know, another outfitter. I mean, I ran into Brian with Uzel, you know, on the river.
Did you challenge him?
It didn't come up.
Okay.
I was right. Trying not to get run over by his entourage of blue boats.
Oh yeah. I think he was doing a guide training, a preseason guide meeting.
Yes, it was. Yep. We actually had a nice chat as we floated through the entire Huggins Canyon still waters.
Oh man, that's nice.
But yeah, absolutely. I mean, we just want, you know, we want people that whoever sees this to get, you know, and excited about it enough to check it out and look at actually donating, and who knows, they might win. They come back on your show and tell you about all this cool stuff.
Look, Sean just commented he entered when he has new Sawyer Dynalite XD blades, extra duties. Sean, are they the small diameter or the large diameter? Are they standard diameter or large diameter? That's the question. Okay, Zach.
Actually, one of the things that folks may notice is if they go to either one of our sites, the Guides Across America sweepstakes is linked on there. And you can actually make your donation on our site. You don't get deduction if you make it on our site. If you want the tax deduction, you got to go to the Guide Relief Program. But if you put that donation in your cart, then you can get an additional discount on whatever you're going to buy from us. And that's direct retail. That's guides included. If you're on the Sawyer Pro Staff, go ahead and enter right there on our site, either one.
So you make the donation and you get a special discount.
Yep. That's a Sawyer deal. It's been going on for over a month.
This is a no-brainer.
It is a no-brainer.
So Zach, we're going to get to questions and we'll come back and we'll do one final push at the end of the show. Does that sound good? Do you want to answer questions with me?
Sure. Let's fire it.
I'm going to need your help because I'm brain dead today. So this is going to help me. I also want to tell everybody, this is Zach Kaufman here. This isn't just any dope. Like, we have Zach, who is an expert on the Rogue, expert on rafting and fishing, and one of the owner. Oh, did I just go away? Oh, my camera.
Oh, you went dark.
Uh-oh, what just happened?
I don't know.
Can you hear me?
Give us a question. Put us in on a question.
Okay. It says that my temperature and my device rose. That's not good. Oh, well, so I'll move us to questions. Okay. So if you have questions about anything, including Sawyer, this is the time to ask. As Zach, here's the first question. A year or so, I asked about large size river shoes. I couldn't find any good options for people that wear size 14 or 15 to wear the dry suits. You didn't have answers for me, but I did find something that worked well so far this season. I found these shoes online. Oh, this is just talking about shoes. Okay. Cool. Oh, here's the link. Let me open up the shoes in the link.
Astral shoes.
So I think that what he's saying is, he asked me about shoes. I didn't have an answer. He found the answer and wants people to know about them. Here they are.
It's an Astro River shoe.
But I don't think Astro makes a shoe that big. I think that's the point. And so if anybody has size, this is a public service announcement. If you have big feet, this is an option. And $74, it's pretty cheap. All right, moving on. Astro Indus. Also, I purchased the new Astral Indus vest and have worn it rafting this spring. I'm 6'2 and 230, although more or less athletically shaped, and find it to be comfortable, but not as comfortable as the green jacket. Do you know what the Astral Indus is, Zach?
I do. We are actually an Astral dealer at Sawyer Station, and we did just receive our order of the Indus jackets. And it obviously competes directly with the green jacket. You know, it has a higher flotation, but it's definitely a different fit. And, I encourage people to go into your local Astral dealer and try some jackets on. It's not something you want to just buy blind, but this person's saying that they found that their green jacket fits a little more comfortable. I could see that because, I mean, it's kind of interesting, they try to keep the same cut, but you're putting in a lot of extra flotation in there.
And flotation is good. If you fall out, flotation's a really good thing.
Flotation's very good.
I'm glad they're doing that. Let's see. I don't fit this. It's way too high for me, though. It would be nice to be able to adjust shoulder straps. Yep. I do like the fact that my waist throwback fits below it and is still okay in a low back seat. I like the additional float and tested it out swimming a bit and it performed well. I do agree that if you had a much of a belly, it would be a tough fit. Blah, blah, blah. Okay. Yeah, this isn't a question. This is just a comment.
Well, and it's always, it's tough to get that right size fitting jacket.
Yeah.
If you kind of got that big belly, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why you got to try stuff on, you know?
Well, and what I'm finding, Zach, with this is, because we teach a lot of students who some of them have bellies. I would call them pear-shaped. And everybody's wearing these kayaking PFDs right now. They're all wearing, like, the Astro Green Jacket is a jacket designed by kayakers for kayakers. And they were picturing somebody who's like 5'10", 150 when they designed that jacket. They did not design this jacket for somebody who's 5'10", 240, shaped like a pear. Like it just doesn't, it's not an effective PFD for that person. But the problem is all of them are the Stolquist Descent, all the Astral PFDs, the mostly NRS PFDs are kayaking PFDs that we're wearing rafting. Even the one Kobe's wearing there in that photo behind you is a kayaking PFD. He's wearing supping.
Yep.
Right. Well, so there's very few rafting specific PFDs or that have flotation. One of them is the NRS Big Water Guide. My camera's dying, so just listen to me. Yep. It's the Big Water Guide, and the Astro Indus is an option, but it is still a kayaking PFD.
Yep. And we actually, when I was outfitting, we kind of had to buck the trend and go for like the high float jacket that had leg loops.
Yeah.
Because it was like, hey, it may not have a float head flap to float your head, but if you shuck it, it's not going to do you any good. So at least the high float with leg loops would stay on you.
Yep.
And that,
I'm a big fan of the leg loops. And I think that the head flap thing is ridiculous. Like that thing, I think they just put that on a PFD 30 years ago and everybody's copying it. It's pointless. Like it, when you're swimming, it's out of the water anyway, because it sits high. It's not adding real flotation.
Exactly.
So I think those are just, I don't think anybody's ever thought to change that. So anyway, to wrap this up, the Astro Indus, it sounds like if you're 6'2 and 230 and you want to wear a waist belt and you want to sit in a low back seat, is a great PFD, but,
Try them on. Go try them on.
And remember, the Indus is a kayaking PFD. People are using it rafting, but it's a kayaking PFD. Becky asks, what are the best PFDs for people with bellies? I would say the NRS Big Water Guide is great. It sits lower. It like covers your belly more. It doesn't sit like above your belly button. It like covers the whole front of your body. So I think it's a really good PFD. I'm not gonna say it's really good. It's the best one out there for rafting, in my opinion. Look, you got a donation.
There you go. There you go.
Okay, next question. We need a question here. These are comments. Okay, do you think the lower Oahe will stay? Oh, geez, over 1,000 CSF through June 3rd. I think it's a typo. I think this person meant CFS. I don't ever predict flows on the Oahe ever or weather. It's just like, I'm not even gonna look at the gauge right now. It's just something I don't ever do. Do you want to try to predict it, Zach?
You know, everybody's happy with the amount of season they've had on the Oahe.
Yeah.
Plan your trip, take your chances, give it a shot, you know?
Yeah.
It is what
I don't ever.
Water and weather.
Yeah. It's just like, if you need 1,000 CFS to go on the Oahe, don't go. That's my best advice. I don't even pretend to predict it. I mean, I've run trips where I don't even try. All right.
Absolutely.
I got the guide and love it. Besides the Big Water, is there any other good rafting ones? No, there really isn't. There's some options. There's some like 4.6 makes one, which is a super safety squirrel one. There's a Mustang one that's not that good. I'm now of the opinion the Big Water Guide is, that's it. And there's a huge, huge market for somebody who wants it. And I was hoping the Astral Indus would fill that niche, but I don't think it does. It doesn't compete unless you're like, again, 5'8", 180 or whatever this guy is who has left his comment.
Yeah. And most any of those jackets, you can put crotch straps on those jackets. If you get the jacket that fits you somewhat, then you've got the flotation. You can put crotch straps on. Some of them even come with loops.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, most of them do.
You know, that's ideal.
Yeah,
it's the biggest thing you want to stay on you if you're in the water.
So what Zach is saying is, if you have a big belly, you want crotch straps. If you're shaped like a pear, like the PFD doesn't want to stay on you, so you definitely want crotch straps. But if you're just a big person, you need flotation, and I think that the big water is the way to go. Sean wears the 4.6. Have you seen the 4.6, Zach?
I have not.
Let me bring it up for you. Force, you're gonna love this. Force
comes with leg six.
Loop. I think there's like option. It's one of these. It's something like this. They make like tactical looking PFDs.
Oh yeah, yeah, gotcha.
And so they're designed for rescuing, but they have, where's the flotation? 26 pounds of flotation.
Yeah, so absolutely.
I would call this high float. You know?
Yeah, no. I mean, if you're in the upper 20s, you're in there.
Yep. Look at this one, the R3. Whoa, that thing's crazy. It has, where's the flotation on this one? 26 pounds. So I think that the guide jacket and the Astral Indus are medium float at 22 pounds. But these 26 pounders, I'd call high float.
Yeah.
Okay. Zach and Zach. Anton, I'm Zach with an H. He's Zach without an H.
Yeah, drop the H for me.
Can you please explain why the shoal cut blade is not for wild rafting? Hey, can I start, Zach, and then you can correct me?
Sure.
Okay. Let me get my camera on. Let me see if I can make my camera look again. So
you gotta cool your computer down.
I gotta cool my maybe it's gonna work. Oh, here we go. I'm up. Okay, this is a Dying Light blade. This is the only blade you need. It is perfect for everything whitewater. It's durable, it's stiff, it's light. This is all you need. That's why the shoal cut is not for wild rafting. Just get this and you're going to be good. All right, Zach, now you can correct me.
Okay, Anton. Now, obviously, Zach has stated his opinion. And that's what it is. It's an opinion.
It's a really good opinion.
But for what he does, he primarily is just running specific rivers. And that's the ideal blade for those specific rivers.
Hold on, Zach. Hold on. Let me fix this. I run a variety of rivers. No. My point is, like, I'm on a huge variety of rivers, whether it's like Big Water, Grand Canyon, or it's like Middle Fork at Low Water, or it's classes on the Hood. I've been on like 20 different rivers this spring. This blade,
right.
This blade has worked for everything. This blade is great. It's not a one-trick pony. This thing does it all. So it's good for everything.
Exactly. But Anton wants to know why he shouldn't be actually running his shoal cuts in whitewater. And so more than likely, if you have purchased shoal cuts, more than likely you do not just go on the river for whitewater. You actually do go on the river to fish as well. And now Zach probably does not fish and does not think about this, but he can relate to this, is if you are fishing a certain area and you are on an inside corner where there's only 2 inches of water off to one side and you're out in the current in the deeper channel, the oar out in the current is going to have no problem pulling water, but the oar over there in the shallows, 2 inches of the corner of that blade that Zach's holding is just going to give you just the corner of the blade. But 2 inches across the shoal cut is going to give you much more purchase. Now, if you actually fish more than you just recreationally whitewater, the shoal cut is an ideal blade for you. If you occasionally are going to use those exact same oars in the whitewater, the shoal cut has just as much surface area as the Dynalite wide, and you will get just as much purchase. The reason that you don't see people using it for whitewater, because it's not specifically designed as a whitewater blade. But, you know, we have folks that say run trips on the Middle Fork, and they actually do run boats that they fish out of as well as whitewater. They run the shoal cuts. They perform great. The biggest thing with the shoal cut is it is a spoon blade. You're not going to really get that feather that you get in a traditional blade of a wider and narrow, But also, one of the things you get in the shoal cut is actually it has more belly below the center line. You can kind of, if you draw a line down that, the shaft of that blade, you can see there's more belly below it than there is above it. And the blade actually releases at the end of every stroke. And so, you know, I would say you want to buy the blades for your primary usage. If you're primarily running whitewater on multiple rivers, the Dynalite XD Wide is the way to go. But if you're doing a variety and you want to have that shallow water option, the shoal cut blade is ideal for that, and you'll get just as much pull. I mean, on a whitewater trip, you may notice that the shoal cut actually is a little bigger blade because it's so bulbous. You're only going to use that many, you know, maybe half of the blade anyways. And so it's a bigger blade than the Dynalite Wide, just as when you're, as far as if you're dipping the same amount of blade in the water. So I would say, you know, you could definitely use it for whitewater. It's not something that we promote, but we have several people that run whitewater and fishing water in it. And a lot of times people are running, you know, class 3+ water in their fishing trip. The blade performs just fine. So
yeah,
buy for what you're going to do the majority of.
So if the majority of what you're doing is whitewater rafting, get the Dynalite, the regular one. If primarily what you're doing is going around shallow bends, then get the shoal cut. That's what I'm hearing.
If you want the ability to actually get good purchase in shallow water, get a pair of shoal cuts.
I can get good purchase in shallow water with these. I do just fine.
You're not going to get the same amount of purchase. Also, it depends on wherever Anton actually is boating the most. Shoal cuts are a regional thing. So if Anton is boating a lot in Montana, he is going to see a lot of shoal cut blades, no matter what the whitewater. If you're in Oregon, ironically, that's where all the Sawyers are made, you're not going to see as many shoal cut
blades. Wait, is there whitewater in Montana?
There's whitewater in Montana.
Oh, interesting.
Have you ever been on the Mad Mile on the Gallatin? It's probably on your little go rafting app.
So there's one. So you're saying there's 1 mile of whitewater in Montana. That's what I'm hearing.
All right, all of Montana, blast all of Zach's channel here. There's plenty of whitewater in Montana.
Let me give you some final reasons you don't want the shoal cut. First of all, when you pick up your oars, it matters which side is up or down. So you can't just grab your oars really quick. If your oar gets spun at something, it does matter the orientation. So you have to deal with that as an extra step, especially in difficult whitewater. Also, I'm noticing that this doesn't have a full, like the that's the protector around the outside. It only goes to
Blade that the model that you have chosen does not show it as a pro blade.
So you can
get it with a full perimeter tip. Yes.
Okay. So I would say if you did get this pro water, get that full perimeter tip. I don't want the perimeter tip to stop there. And I don't know. That's probably the reason I don't like it. Hopefully we answered your question.
Actually, I think you pulled up a stubby even. That's a whole nother discussion.
It does look kind of short to me. It does say stubby. That's what happened. It does look short. I'm like, plus it'll make your oar shorter, but I'm guessing there's a full length one of these shoal cuts. There we go. It just looks silly.
And that's the pro that has the full perimeter.
Oh, you're right. That's cool. Huh. Yeah. It doesn't make sense to me why you would want that for whitewater.
Hopefully we answered the question for Anton. Yep.
Okay, here we go. Next question. Zach, did you ever run Kuipers in the South Fork? Yes, I've run Kuipers in the South Fork. Looks like Sean snapped his Dynalites in Bogus. Sean, I have a question for you. Did you have the Dynalite? This is extra duty. Does yours say extra duty? And did you have the full wrap? The key here is the full wrap all the way down. Is it extra duty and full wrap, or did you get the partial wrap regular duty? All right, Jay bought a Justin Bieber. The big water guide we call the Justin Bieber. And love it so far. Very adjustable. Yeah, it's just, you know, I wore the Indus on two Illinois trips, and I wore the Justin Bieber on two Illinois trips. And just, I love the fact that it sat lower. but also just putting on and off. You just like put your arm loops in and zip it. You don't have to like squiggle your arms up every time and then like pull it up over your head. Undo. There's like four buckles. It's just unzipping down. And so it's pretty nice. All right, here we go. I'm getting Montana. Alberton Gorge. That sounds crazy. The Alberton Gorge on the Clark Forks Class 3. Yeah, you could, your shoal cuts, you'll survive in your shoal cuts on the Class 3 for sure. Anton, sounds like Zach is just stuck in his ways and maybe too weak to handle the bigger shoal cut blade. He's talking about you, I think.
Oh, no, that's got an H on the end of it. That's you all the way.
But seriously, as long as durability is an issue, I think the shoal cuts make sense. I'm not sure why you're like reinventing the wheel. Just like, whatever. I'm not,
Anton
just like
probably fishes some too. You know, he's a multi-user.
Anton, hold on. Anton, do you fish? Do you fish, Anton? I, my guess is he's a whitewater guy trying to like find some new cool blade. Dying to run Bear Trap Cane in the Madison.
Oh, there you go, dude.
There you go. Yep. There's some whitewater. All right. Also spinning the blade around. Oh, geez. Oh, man. Gilman grips. There's probably nothing more annoying to me than Gilman grips and shoal cut blades. Oh man,
that's Anton likes to customize his stuff.
Obviously. I mean, it's kind of a kayaker vibe. I mean, as a kayaker,
he's got it. He's right, tuning like, his stuff in.
Yeah, like as when I kayak, I want a shoal cut. I mean, it's whatever those are called. In a kayak. I don't use straight blades kayaking. I use whatever they're called, like whatever they're called.
Spoons.
Spoons, whatever they are. Yeah, yeah. XD with full rep. Oh, wow. That's hard to do, Sean. Must have been exciting. Don't the XD blades have an ash core versus fur on the regular blades?
Yes. Whoa. Yes. If you're running, I actually had this discussion with one of the Oozle guides on the river, is that, yes, if you're running gear boats, you should definitely make the extra investment and get the XD blade. Because the XD has a full ash core, not a laminated core. So the standard Dynalite blade with the regular tip has a laminated core, has an ash fur laminate. The Pro has an ash fur laminate. But the XD, not only does it have extra layers on the blade of unidirectional carbon fiber, it also has a solid ash core.
And so the XD is beefier than the Pro, is what you're saying.
Yes.
It goes regular, Pro, then XD.
Yes.
Hey, Zach, I just want to remind you of something I brought up a few times. I really want to be in your naming committee. I know.
I feel like the Pro
should be beefier than the XD. To me, the Pro sounds like the Pro version. It's like the best. And XD is just like it's good, but it's not Pro.
You have to realize that one of the things that's on all of our oars are Pro tips. And so the full perimeter Pro tip is where the Pro blade comes from.
Got it. Yeah. Let's have a naming committee meeting and fix all this, because it's very confusing.
We will. Okay. We will work on that.
Okay. Love my Dynalite's only blade I've never broken. Yeah. I mean, we give Dynalite's to our rowing school students. And we run a lot of rowing schools. We let our students beat the crap out of them. They rarely break. I mean, we put them to the test. Sean, if you broke an oar bogus, it must have been explosive, because we hammer these blades hard. I can attest that they're durable. Oh, there, of course. And then get whatever you want. Yeah, it doesn't matter. When you say
he fishes and he runs whitewater, so he wants to be able to do it all. That's his question. That's his point.
Okay. Yeah, if you fish, they'll be fine in like class 3 with a Gilman grips. They'll do just fine. But if you're gonna
people on Velvet Falls on the Middle Fork with shoal cut blades.
At Velvet Falls on the Middle Fork, the last year's Velvet Falls, this year's Velvet Falls, I don't think so.
They're still gonna go. They'll still have their shoal cuts.
Yeah, we'll see. I would say, like, if I'm on the Illinois or the Wind, I don't want shoal cuts. I want just a good, solid oar I can throw in the water. But if I'm running the Rogue and, like, I don't know, I'm fishing, sure, I'm sure shoal cuts with Gilman grips are fine.
I even run narrows sometimes.
In your opinion, how long can somebody run a 70s Avon down to easy class 3 without it being an unreasonable liability? If it still holds air and stiff, you're fine. I don't know. Avons can last a long time.
Yeah, they're well made.
Yeah. I mean, just keep the patch. You
can't get them anymore, so.
Yeah, that's great. That's great fabric. So, I don't know. Depends on your skill. A lot of it is your skill as well as you holding there. Oh, good. He sent pics of the Carnage of Bogus. Is this the same Carnage you had the last time you shared Carnage of Bogus, or is this new Carnage? That's what I'm curious about. He also whitewater. Okay. All right.
Go.
All right. Anton, give us more details. I want to, when you call it whitewater, what are you talking about? Are we talking about like, tell us more about the deets. Like, are you, what state you're in? What rivers you do? Now I need to know. Now I need to know. Okay. Let's go back to questions. All right. So the answer to this one is, I don't know what the flow is going to be through June 3rd. Okay. Was wondering if you're planning on getting some video of the problem areas in the Middle Fork. Our group launches June 16, and we are trying to make the decision to fly in or do the top section. I know the river well, but not this year because of all the changes. I appreciate any info. So I'm not going to get video because my first trip out there is also June 16th. So I'll see you there on June 16th. But I have no plans to go get video. But people are going to get video. There's already video posted. I know there's several groups on the water right now, and some of them ran Velvet at the past couple days in rafts. So that video will come out as soon as they get off the water. So I don't know. Watch Facebook. Most people post this on Facebook. Watch Facebook and you'll see the video. The latest beta I have from today is that groups are launching from boundary. People are running it in rafts, but it's really hard and there's a good chance of flipping. And that's all I have. Right now on our June 16th, I'm leaning towards running from boundary on the 16th, but I'm not 100%. And I probably won't be 100% until a week before ish. I might even wait till closer than that, but it's a hard decision to make. You definitely, like, we're going to run 18-foot boats to plow over that hole. We're going to have seasoned guides who know the river well that boat a lot. Like, we're going to have high-level people there. It just depends on your crew, I guess.
Can you portage it?
You can portage it, but it's a lot of work. Depends how much stuff
you can't. You can't just line float it.
I don't think you can line it because like you line from the right.
Manky.
Yeah, because I think if you line from the right, there's those that trees in the way, that wood in the way.
Right.
So,
I only saw a couple photos. It looked pretty manky.
Yeah, and your boat, I mean, if you're lining it, your boat's still going to flip. I mean, you might as well be in it and try to, like, make some moves.
Right.
You know, if you didn't have it attached to a rope when it flips. Yeah. Sean, you sent it to my – I'm not checking my email right now, Sean, so I'll have to look at that later.
We'll share that in a later discussion.
I would definitely schedule some airplanes. Like, I would call the air company and say, we want to get in your schedule. You pay them a deposit even if you lose it because – we don't know what's going to happen. That rapid could get worse. If it could get better, it could get worse. Yeah, I know what's going to happen. Okay, Rogue Flows. What are the rapids on the Rogue like at 3000 CFS? We have a trip launching this Thursday, and we'd love to know what you all are seeing out there. I'm not out there because I'm in the office doing the show, but Zach was out there last week.
What I was just seeing? There.
Yeah.
The flows are awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, 3,000 CFS at Grants Pass, 45, it was like 4,600 at Agnes. I mean, it's a very friendly flow. At Blossom, obviously, you got to know where to go, but, you know, you just can't relax. It's pushing. You know, I mean, if you just floated, you would go probably right through the picket fence at this level. But, you know, there's talk. People are like, oh, it's high enough to go right. I would say no, it's not a good idea to go right at Blossom. You know, there's a big hole in Upper Black Bar, but if you stick to the standard line, it's all good. You know, I mean, it's definitely, if you stick to your lines and know that you're at a higher flow, so you need to start your moves maybe a little bit earlier than you would a year ago at 1700 CFS. you know, that's the biggest thing. But yeah, I mean, I think the 3000 at Grants Pass and 4600 at Agnes is a great flow. Yeah. You know, moves right along. If you're going to do a 4-day trip, you'll have some time. But
I mean, isn't that the most ideal flow there is? If you were to pick the most ideal flow on the Rogue, wouldn't it be 3000?
3000 at Grants Pass is a good flow. You know, it's just it. You definitely need to, you know, you need to aggressively make your move and blossom to get to the center of the river. And actually at 4600 at Agnes, I would say that it's probably easier to go to the right at the bottom instead of going left of Volkswagen, because there's a big compression wave and a hole in front of Volkswagen that you definitely need to kind of really get across there early. But there's so much water. I mean, you can even go just to the right of Volkswagen straight through there, yeah, if you want to. You
know, well, so, yeah. I do love that right run of blossom.
Right from the top or right from the bottom?
Right at the top. I love just that right move. In a small boat, it should be fine. Like if you're in like a 12 or 13 foot boat,
yeah,
at this level, it's probably fine. But when do you start thinking about running that right line?
I'd say you want to be over 5,500 in your Agnes area, at least. And also, you know, I am somewhat of a superstitious river boater. You know, I make sure that I pay homage to the gorilla head above blossom every time. And if the gorilla's nose is out of the water, I'm not even thinking about going right.
Interesting. I don't think I know this gorilla you're talking about.
Oh, I'll have to take a picture of it and share it with you then.
Wait, is it in the rapid or somewhere upstream?
It's upstream. Okay. It's upstream. It's just between the Rogue Terrace and the top of Blossom. River left.
Sean has some friends up on the Middle Fork today. They're thinking of portaging Velvet. I mean, I'm interested in what's going to happen. We're about to get a bunch of people launched this week. We're about to get a ton of social media when everybody gets off the river about success or not success. We're about to learn a lot. But a lot of times rapids look really bad, but people start running them and they find kind of the secrets. And so, and maybe the first few people are kind of afraid to be the guinea pigs. And then once 20, 30 boats have gone through, we kind of realize it's not that bad. So we may learn that it's not that, or we might learn that it's nasty. We're going to find out a lot of information here pretty quick. Okay. Well, I think we're almost done, Zach. I want to recap the show. First of all, just get the Dynalite Pro. Don't get the Pro. Get the XD. Just get the Dynalite. This shortcut thing is insane. Who invented the shortcut, Zach?
Do you want me to tell you it was a whitewater guy?
No. I'm just curious. Was it you?
No. Dude, I've only been involved for 12 years.
This is pre-you? Shortcut is pre-you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. I have to say,
been around for 20 plus years.
As an aspiring member of the naming community, I approve of this name. I think the name Shortcut makes me want to buy it. It just sounds cool. Yeah, I got some Shortcuts on there. That's a good name. Like I think that's why people like it. It's because it's a cool name.
Yeah. No, it did actually come from Gary Beebe and Mike Bakke, from two hard boat builders. There's the Mountain Drift Boat Blade is another blade that's out there that you're unaware of. And it's actually another version of a Shortcut. It's even a little bigger blade. And you find those a lot on certain variety of hard boats.
Did you call it a mountain drift boat? Who makes it?
Mountain Drift Boat Blade. You can find them. It looks very similar to the Shortcut. We make the blade. We make the Shortcut and the Mountain Drift Boat Blade. And one's run by, runs on Clack Craft boats, and other ones run on Stealth Craft boats.
That one there?
Yep. Yep. You can see right under the fish, it says by Sawyer. So yeah, that was actually designed by Gary Beebe.
That's cool.
He's since retired, but the Mountain Drift Boat Blade is still around, and actually you can find them primarily at your local Clack & Craft dealer.
Huh. So I like that. That looks like a kayak blade to me. Honestly, if I saw that, I think somebody's kayak.
Yeah, that's the same profile as a shoal cut, just a little bit different.
Yeah. Okay. All right. What's your formula again for needing cold water gear? Something like if water temp plus air temp is below X, you need a wetsuit or a dry suit. Okay. This is a complicated. Back in the day when I started guiding, you would add water temperature and air temp, and you'd get this number, and that would dictate what you did. The new thinking is it's only water temperature. That's what matters, is water temperature. And it's a response to cold water immersion. So if you fall out of your boat, there can be a cold shock response that can kill you one of several different ways. And so the goal, we're always afraid of hypothermia, which we should be afraid of, but we should really be afraid of cold water, like cold water shock. And so I'm going to say cold water shock can happen at any temperature below 70 degrees, which is pretty warm water. So, and it depends on your health and the amount of cold water you've been around. So if you're on, so like, I think some people would say wetsuits and dry suits below 60 degrees, which seems reasonable. And some people might even go lower to 55. I don't know, but I would say 60 degrees and lower, you should wear a wetsuit or a dry suit, mainly in case you fall out and to avoid that cold water shock. To me, a wetsuit or dry suit doesn't matter. They both do the same thing. They stop that initial cold water shock response. So my quick answer is water temperature below 60, you should seriously think about them, and especially if you have health conditions. Hopefully that answers that question. What is your ideal raft security program at camp? Tie downs, drag raft at beach, both. Are those NRS stakes legit? I've always had an anchor, but heli trip this summer. Whoa. What's your raft security program at camp? Tie downs?
I like beach? To, I mean, I don't do a lot of boating on huge sandy beaches, but so I prefer to tie to solid objects, but you know, I mean, I've seen the stakes work fairly well, but I'm leery when there's like more than a couple boats hooked to one stake, you know. So I find that it's best to just, you know, bust out your throw bag and yep. go for the 60 feet to get to a tree.
Yep. I'm a big fan of a tree. Get up to a tree, something 5 inches in diameter, at least 5 feet tall and alive. 5 and alive. And use a taw line hitch on a bite or a round turn 2 half-inches to tie it up and marry the boats. Tie the boats together. I think that's important to do. I think these sand stakes work really well on rivers where there aren't trees, but there's lots of sand. So in the Grand Canyon, these things work amazing. Okay, you need these in the Grand Canyon. There's not trees to tie up to. So if there are trees, I would just go trees. If there's not trees and there's sand, I would go sand stake.
I sometimes even use two attachments, you know, just to keep the boat in the right place in an eddy. You know, if you're pulled in two different big places. Eddy and it just keeps trying to blow your boat up out of camp, you know, just hook another one up on it to keep your boat to the shore.
Yep. Cool.
I mean, I prefer to wake up and have my boat where the same place I left it when it got dark.
I think everybody does for sure. I've been pretty fanatical about tying boats together. Like, let's tie all of our boats up individually and then marry them as a backup. I've been a really big fan of that.
But also, you know, you need to take into consideration what your boat is rubbing up against. I've come down, you know, and seen boats, especially commercially, where a real rocky area and the eddy's pretty violent. And you go down there and look at your boat and, you know, the rock is all, you know, powdered blue because your boat's been just sitting there.
Yeah.
So you also need to think about padding the rock, you know, put an extra pad or something in between the rock and your boat, because it's going to sit there and wear all night for 12 hours.
If the water's surging, like if it's surging like that, especially like a high water middle fork. Yeah. That's a big deal. If it's not surging, just tie it up tight. It shouldn't move up and down, but when the water's surging, you definitely want to have something there.
Sure.
Yeah, on the Illinois, there's a lot of trees covered in poison oak. You just got to like look around a little bit. So there's a The Illinois is a poison oak. An oaky river. It should be set aside as a preserve for poison oak, as a place that has some of the best old growth poison oak in the world. It's spectacular.
Yeah, I don't think the Illinois got on the top 10 list of poison oak rivers, but it definitely.
Oh, it is. It's number one. It's the most prolific poison oak I've ever seen on a river, and the old growth. I mean, there's like that thick.
Oh yeah,
there's real thick like pieces of it everywhere. Five inches diameter, 5 feet tall, and alive.
And growing.
Perfect. And alive. Yeah. Okay. Let's finish up to remind everybody about Guides Across America. Do you want
Absolutely.
To give?
Absolutely.
This is time Across for the America, final elevator pitch.
$17,000 prize package. You have till Friday at 11:59 to enter. So please enter now. Donate, challenge a friend, challenge a coworker, and even if you're not someone who wants to use all these things to go on the river and go angling, you could take Anton with you. You know, he would love all this stuff. But, you know, the boat is an Air Super Puma made for Outcast. You know, the oars on there, the Sawyer oars we didn't even talk about. You get your choice of three oars, any size you want. So you could get 10-foot oars in this prize package and put them on your whitewater boat and go run the Middle Fork.
Can I put shoal cut blades on them?
You could put shoal cut blades on them if you want. You could put wides on them. You could put narrows on them. It's your choice, your flavor. So, you know.
Wait, Zach, can I get 12-foot oars with stubby shoal cuts?
Well, if you had 12-foot oars and stubby shoal cuts, you'd have to get 12.5-foot oars to get that size with a stubby.
Can I get 12.5-foot oars with stubby shoal cuts?
All right. Everybody needs to go on, make a donation, and challenge Zach to challenge somebody else to make a donation. We got 3 days to move the needle on this thing. And that's my pitch. $17,000 prize package, minimum donation of $25. Challenge a friend, challenge a buddy, challenge a coworker. Let's move the needle and make a difference.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for watching. Zach, thanks for being here and sharing all this information about Guides Across America and just about boating in general. Thank
Absolutely.
You for your time.
Anytime.
And we'll see you all next week.
All right.